We begin the current daf, Maseches Bamitzia daf Ayin, begin on the third line down with the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues in a related discussion that will come back to the topic we were mentioning on the previous daf. That is, we were mentioning in the previous Mishnayos, the halach of Iska, and how it relates to the topic of our parak, to that of Ribbis. Iska is when a person invests, he gives to someone else to do the work, and he provides the money, he provides the product. Now, the concern is, regarding the profits that the person is taking back, he's giving the worker a certain amount of money. He's taking back more money than what he gave. He could run into problems of ribbis because it's like a loan. Now, the difference is if it's not through the format of a loan, but rather like an iska, we say half it is a loan, half it is a deposit, he's making the profit on his deposit. So to be discussed, related to the brought in the previous Mishnah, speaking about the rental of an item. The rental of an item generally, there isn't full responsibility on the part of the renter, because when you rent something, there's the assumption that things are going to get ruined, and you don't pay for what's called pachsa, but you pay for agra. On the other hand, if you're paying agra, you're not going to pay pachsa, but if you're paying pachsa, you're not going to be able to pay agra, as we brought in the case of the ship. In general, if you're paying for pachsa, which means to say that you have to give it back as is, that's like a loan. Then you can't give agri, you can't give rent, because that's going to be essentially ribbis on the loan. Matt the Gemara explained that the case of the ship is different, because although there could be a case when you're giving both agri and pachsa, is because it's not a full liability, it's only when it breaks. But if it depreciates, then the renter is not going to be responsible, so he could pay rent and still take responsibility for the total loss after it gets broken. That's not like a total milva. Now that's why Gemara continues in a related discussion, which Amrav An Omer Shmuel says, Moishal Yisayim, a different halacha, but it's going to relate back to this topic. The money of orphans, mutar lahalvoisin beribis, it's permitted to be lent out on interest. Now, as Tosafos explains, one approach is that, although that, fine, even in regard to the orphans, maybe it's going to be permitted, but what are you going to do with the borrower? The borrower himself has a prohibition of paying on interest. And that this opinion would hold that there is no problem of loisashich, which is the prohibition on the borrower, because it's only when the lender has the iser, then the borrower has the iser too. But as the Gemara assumes originally, since orphans, it's not problematic, we could lend their money, they could be lenders of interest, so then the borrower could also borrow an interest. That's what Rav Anan said in the name of Shmuel. On that, Omer Rav Nachman, he says, Mishum de Yasmininu, because they're orphans, Safina lohu isur, we feed them something that's prohibited? Yasmi da'achli, the lavdi too, he says, what do you mean? You're not allowed to feed orphans. You're not allowed to give something non-kosher to a child. You can't have them do a violation, an issur d'oraisa of ribbis. So he says, to the contrary, yasmi da'achli, the lavdi too, orphans that consume that which is not theirs, meaning taking interest, taking more money back than what they lent, leiz lubasa shivkayu, says Rav Nachman, they should go after those who had left them, meaning after their father, to the cemetery, meaning they're orphans because their father died. Then they should also die. We don't go ahead and feed orphans something prohibited. We don't let them lend their money on the issur of ribbis. So Amalei, so Rav Nachman said to Rav Anan, Emily Azi, tell me exactly, Gufa de Uvda, the incident that happened that you saw the master Shmuel do this. Hecha Hava, how was it that you're testifying in his name that he said you're allowed to lend the money of orphans on ribbis? Because Rav Nachman said to Rav Anan, most definitely did not hear this explicitly from his mouth, because it can't be. So rather tell me what it is that you saw that you're testifying that that's what he held, and I'll explain to you. You obviously misunderstood something. So Amaleis, Rav Anan says as follows. He says, Ahududu, there was this bowl, this container, it's called a cauldron, the Bnei Marukva, which was owned by the sons of Marukva, who they were orphans from their father Marukva. The Hava Beimar Shmuel, it was in the household of the master Shmuel. Now, what did Shmuel do with this money, with the assets of the orphans? Takal v'yohivle, he would weigh it, and then he would give it out, he would rent it out to other people, and before he gave it to them, he would weigh it, and then, takal v'shakale, he would then, when he took it back for them, he would weigh it again. And if some of the copper of the cauldron was missing, so shakal agra v'shakal pachsa, so first of all, he would charge rent for using the cauldron, and moreover, the renters would pay him for the amount of what was lacking, besides for the payment of the rent. Now, pichsa refers to the lacking of the copper, where it gets used up. Some of it gets deteriorated when you use this copper cauldron, this type of a container, because it's used on heat. So on that, says Rav Anan, if you would entertain to say that it's prohibited to lend the money of orphans on ribbis, so I understand. I agra lepachsa. As we mentioned, this is where it relates back to the discussion of the previous daf. If he's charging them rent, then he can't charge them for what it becomes deficient, because that means they're like a renter. A renter doesn't pay for pachsa. And vipachsa loyakra. And if they're paying for what was deficient, that means to say that we're treating them like borrowers, because only by a loan is there total responsibility for whatever happens. Then why do they give the payment for the rent? Since they're taking upon themselves the payment of the deficiency, then it's like a loan, and then paying rent would ultimately be like ribbis. So Amalei, so Rav Nachman said to Ravon, you have it wrong. That you can't prove from this story, because this was the estate of orphans, that you see Mar Shmuel was lending it out and taking back rent, which is ribbis on the loan, because it must be like a loan because the renters are taking full responsibility. To the contrary, says Rav Nachman, Kiha, such a case, afila b'diknoni, even by adult orphans, where they have a full beard, and they're not even called in halacha like the leniencies of orphans, namishar lemevet, it's even permitted for them to do what Mar Shmuel did. The mekabli alayu chuscha denachsha. The reason being is because they accept upon themselves, the owners, the orphans, the responsibility of the value of the copper which is left over, as the Gemara is going to shortly explain, the kama demakli nachsha, because as much as the copper gets burned, butzer demei, the value of what's even left, meaning although you're right that the renters are paying for what becomes deficient of the weight, meaning whatever is less of the weight of the copper, which obviously got burnt up, that they do give back, but that doesn't make them into borrowers, into the halacha of a milva. Because additionally, there is a deficiency in the copper that's even remaining from what gets burnt in the fire, that creates the remaining copper in a lower value that the renters are not paying for, and therefore they do remain like renters and they don't become like borrowers, because the borrower would take full responsibility for everything that happens, not just for what gets burnt out, but even what's remaining, whatever deficiencies are, has to be brought back as is. And since they're not bringing back as is, therefore there's no problem about charging rent, because they're not like a milva, even though they're paying for certain things, and it's not a total, it's not like a milva, and that's why it's permitted. That is why he said that there's no raya, there is no such halacha that you could lend the orphan's money and charge ribbis, because it's forbidden. But Amar Rabba Bar Shila, Amar Rav Chisda, and some say Amar Rabba Bar Yezer Bar Chama, Amar Rav Sheshes, what is permitted to be done is not to violate biblical ribbis, like was just proved by Rav Nachman, but however, there would be permissibility regarding rabbinic ribbis. And that he says that Moishal Yisayimim, the money of orphans, Motel Avois, and you're allowed to lend it, what's called Korav Lischar, meaning to say that the orphans will take a portion in the profits, but which means to say close to gain, because they're only taking profits, but not necessarily gain, because they might not make any profits. And V'ruchik Lehefsid, and they're far from a loss, because they don't take any part of the loss. Now, that's what it's permitted to do with the orphans' money, not to lend on full biblical ribbis, rather regards to what their money will gain, that they'll split. Now, even though that type of a case by what's called bidikinoni, by elderly people, by adults, by adult orphans, that it's forbidden, because the truth is, in such a case, if the orphans are giving the money in the kaip of an iska, where they're not taking any of the loss, means to say that the borrower is taking all responsibility, that essentially is like a full milva. And if they're taking back part of the profits, that's taking ribbis on what the loan was. But that's not biblical ribbis. It's just what's called avak ribbis. It's rabbinic ribbis, and it's only rabbinic. And the reason for that is because it's not ribbis ketsutza. It's not prearranged ribbis, because if there are no profits, which it's a risk, anytime you don't know if there's going to be any profits, they're not going to get anything out of that loan. And ribbis, biblical ribbis, is only when it's prearranged, where you know for sure you're going to get back more money than what you gave. So therefore, by orphans, they did not make the rabbinic decree, because we don't want them to use up all their money and they're not going to be left with anything to feed themselves. Therefore, they created a situation where allowing them to invest and to maintain the principles so that the orphans can have a way of being brought up with some type of financial security. And therefore, they were lenient in regards to rabbinic ribbis, but not, like Rav Nachman said, on biblical ribbis. So talking about Linda Bryce regarding the case that we just described, Karv l'schav rochik lehefsid, if the owner of the money or the animal or whatever it is that's giving the product to the worker does such a type of operation where he's going to take only from the profits and no loss, So that, as we said before, that's rabbinically forbidden. And therefore, such a person who does it as an adult, in contrast to the orphans, Rosh is considered a wicked person. Now, Karv lehefsid v'rochik l'schar, let's say he does the exact opposite. Let's say he takes all the loss and he splits the profits, meaning he's close to loss and he's very far from getting a gain because he's going to be splitting the profits. So such a person is a chassid, he's a pious person, and he goes beyond himself and he's expanding into others where he's actually giving more of a favor for the guy who's doing the work, where the guy's not going to get any liability and just gain, and he'll take all responsibility. Now, karv lezeh lezeh, now if it's close to either one, or meaning of gain or of loss, or rachik mizeh mizeh, or he's far from either one, meaning he's not going to make so much money, but he's not going to have that much of a loss. So as we meet this kalad, and that's the measurement of a regular type of a person, which is what we call the classic iska, which is however much you're investing in getting the gain, that's how much you'll invest in getting the loss. However much proportion in the rights and the shares of the venture that you have, that's how much you'll gain or lose. That is the middle ground, which we said it still has to be covered regards to the one who's doing the work has to get some type of a pay for the work he's doing for your part of that portion. But regards to the actual money themselves, that is the regular way. It's not a rasha or a chassid. Now, going back to what we said before, which was the reason why we were lenient actually in the monies of orphans, because we want to provide for them. That's why it was established that they could lend their money in what's called karv l'schar and rachik l'hafsid. So Amalei Rabbi Rav Yosef, he says, Hani Zuz the Yasmi, the monies of the orphans, that they have what's called a Karen, they have money that was put away for them. Hey Chavdin Lehu, what do we do with them? How do we make sure that they have financial security? So Amalei says to him, so Mezvin Lehu Beidin, we first create a Bezna court, Vavin Lehu Zuz, and they provide for the orphans just a little amount of money every single day to provide for food for their meals. And therefore we make sure that they don't squander the rest of the money. So Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef said to Rabbi, so Rabbi said to Rabbi Yosef, but v'hoko kal yikarna. But how does that help? Ultimately, that's going to use up all the principles. So although it's going to go slow, but slow and steady before they know that the money's going to be gone. So Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef said to him, so mahecha, but how does the master do it? What's your approach? So Amalei said to him, but kinan gavra de islei de hava pricha. First we go and we check if we can find a person that has little chunks of gold. Which the reason for that is because then we know for sure that it's his and it's not deposited by him, because people don't usually deposit small little scraps of gold as a deposit. Big chunks that you would deposit by someone, small little things, it's a person holds on to it. So it must be that it's his chunks of gold. So since we know that it's his, and obviously that means to say he's a wealthy person, that's why he has pieces of gold. And the purpose of that is that we know that if, let's say, we'll invest with him money from the orphans that he'll have collateral to collect from if there's a loss in the investment. So we find such a person that we know that he's wealthy. And we take gold from that person, from that wealthy person, as collateral. And then we give him the money of the orphans to invest. And what type of investment? As we said before, that it's going to be only gain for the orphans and no loss for the orphan, so they'll split the profits, but the loss will be taken by the wealthy person, but at least they'll have capital to invest in business dealings, and that's what we do with the money of the orphans. Now, avadav mesuim loy, but if it's a concrete, definitive object that we see by the wealthy person that makes us aware that he's wealthy, that we don't take that and use that as collateral from the wealthy person, so that we know we're not going to lose the money of the orphans, because even if he goes bankrupt, we have that money collateral. Because Dima Pekadin, maybe it wasn't his money. Maybe it was just deposited by him. V'asimari, then the owner of that deposit is going to come, because everyone's going to hear this guy went bankrupt. They're all going to try to get their stuff from him. And this guy's going to come and get his deposit. And you have Simon v'shakale, and he's going to give a sign to the Bezdin, and he's going to take it from what they were holding for the orphans, and the orphans are going to be left holding nothing. They're going to lose all their money. So then we got to find something that we know for sure that it's his, and not just deposited by him, which is just these small little pieces of gold, that we know that it's his and wasn't deposited. That's how we know that it's literally his. We can take that as collateral, and then we invest the money of the orphans with him, again, as karv l'schar and rachik l'hafsid. Now that asks the Gemara. Amar Ravashi says, Tenach imishtakeh gavra de'isle d'havah pricha. So you created a solution for orphans if you find such a person that has these small pieces of gold. But if you don't find such a person that has these little pieces of gold, so what? Then we're going to consume the orphan's money. What do you do then? You said that you can't just give them little pieces of money because they're going to end up using the principal. So you said, okay, find such a person. Let's say you don't find such a person. What do you do? Who said we're going to find such a wealthy person that has this small piece of gold that we know that it's his and we could take it from him? So Elamar Ravashi, rather Ravashi says, it says, Chazinan Gavra, we find a person, the Mishapu Nichse, that the word Mishapu is from the word Ashafu, that his properties are calm by him, meaning there's no one that's contesting his properties. Umehemen, he's a trustworthy person. Vishamadina Deres, he listens to the laws of the Torah. Vilema Kabul Shamtid Rabban, he never accepted upon himself the rabbinic excommunication for not acceding to the rabbis. And we find such a person, that's not so hard. You have to find an upstanding person. And Viavin Luhunahale Bedin, and then we give him the orphan's money in front of a court, which the court has the ability to declare ownless the estate of the one who's receiving the money towards the orphans, and then they can make those conditions with him that the money he's investing from the orphans will be carved l'schav v'rochik l'hafsid, and if he defaults, that although he's not wealthy, but that they'll have access to his properties because hefker bezen hefker, they could take all his money away and give it to the orphans. Such a person who is upstanding, that's the type of person we could find. You don't have to find necessarily a wealthy person, and then we'll invest the money of the orphans with him, where they get only split into profits but no loss. That's how we take care of the orphans. Now the Gemara continues on the Beis and continues on the next Mishnah, again continuing the topic of our parak of the halachas of ribis, of lending on interest, and specifically of the mechanics of an iska, which is when there's a person that has money or a product and he gives it to someone else to do the work, then they split the profits, how to make sure that that is not going to violate the halachas of ribis, because essentially, at least on part of it, is a loan, and the one who's giving it is getting back more than what he gave, either in money or in acts of service. So one has to make sure that one's not getting back more than what he gave in regards to a loan. Now, the Mishnah says, although we said that there are formats that allow investment from the financier to the worker, but one operation that definitely is not allowed is that a Jew is not allowed to accept what's called the iron sheep from another Jew. What that means to say iron sheep is that it's iron for the one who owns the animal or the property, that he's getting back for sure his principal, is because the one who receives it, the worker, takes all responsibility for all of the losses. Meaning to say they evaluate at the moment that it's given to the worker the amount that, let's say, that animal is worth, and he's going to give back exactly that amount at the end of the day. So the guy who's investing is not losing anything. Now, as long as he doesn't pay him up that principal, all the profits are split in the middle. That's what we're saying, that you're not allowed to accept that type of operation from the Jewish person. And the reason is Menishu Rib is because that's clearly interest, because here all of it is a milva, because all of it is being taken responsibility on the part of the worker. And therefore, he's just giving and he's getting back more money than what he gave. If you say, like the classic isk, as we said in the previous Mishnah, is part of it is a bekadin, part of it is a milva, and he's only making the profits on his part. So fine, he's not making profits off the loan. But here it's totally a loan because he's taking all responsibility of the worker, and therefore it's ribis and it's forbidden. Now, Rashi points out, although seemingly the halach of our Mishnah is superfluous, because the previous Mishnah, Daf Samachesim and Aleph, taught us you can't even have a storekeeper split profits with you. And the reason for that is because he's going to be accepting only part of it as a milva, which he accepts responsibility. And we said that's even the problem, because the work that he's doing for you, again, as we said, unless you go ahead and you pay him for that work, but even that is considered a problem about ribis. For sure, here we accept all responsibility. For sure, it's totally a milva. For sure, it's a problem. So that's, Rashi says, you're right. It just was said because we wanted to contrast it with the Seifa of our Mishnah, which said that you could be Mekabel Tzern Barzel from the Akum. That's what we wanted to say, that is permitted, although you cannot do it with a Jew. But as the Mishnah says, of Mekabel Tzern Barzel from the Akum, you could accept that type of a business deal with a non-Jew to say that what you're taking from him, you'll give him back all of the principal. He has nothing to be worried about. He's not going to get any loss. That's permitted with a non-Jew. And moreover, you're allowed to borrow and lend in full-fledged, pre-arranged ribis with a non-Jew, because the halacha of ribis only applies to a fellow Jew. And you're allowed to also lend and borrow on interest with the resident convert, who's also a non-Jew. It's just that he keeps the shiva mitzvah b'nei noach, the seven Noahide laws, doesn't do idol worship, even though he eats non-kosher, that he's not considered as a Jewish person. Therefore, you're allowed to have the halachas of ribis with him. Now, The Mishnah concludes in this contrast of a Jew and a non-Jew. Malvi Yisrael Ma'isav Shal Akim. A Jew is allowed to lend another Jew the monies of a non-Jew, Midas Ha'akim, with the awareness and the consent of the non-Jew. Shigmar is going to explain what does this mean. Avalim Midas Yisrael, but not with the consent of the Jewish person. Shigmar will explain that statement. But first, the Mishnah goes, the Gemara goes to explain the halacha of our Mishnah. We explain that the structure of the Tzayim Barzel is that the one who is doing the work is taking full responsibility. And therefore it's like a loan, which a loan is the moment that the borrower gets the money, it's totally his. He owes other money now to the lender, meaning whatever it is, I owe you exactly what you gave me, but it's totally his. That's why he said that it's forbidden to be done this procedure with another Jew. On that, as the Gemara, lememra de b'shusa de mekabel kaima, so as we said, is that to say that the Tzayim Barzel is totally in the domain of the one who's receiving that Tzayim Barzel. As we said, because he has the liability, from the fact that we said that it's going to be a problem about ribbis, obviously it's a halva, and it's totally in the rishus of the leva. On that, as the Gemara v'rimino. But that seems to be contradicted from another Mishnah, Maseftas Bechiris. The Mishnah says, ha-mekabel Tzayim Barzel min anachrim, we said you're allowed to do Tzayim Barzel with a non-Jew, which means, say, he gives you sheep. It's, let's say, worth now at the time that they're giving, it's worth $100. You do work with it, sell, fatten it, whatever you're going to do, and it's, we'll sell it for $500, $400 profit. You'll get $200, I'll get $200. But says the non-Jewish provider says, I'm not taking any loss. You got to give me back exactly the principal. So that's permitted, as we said in the Mishnah. But moreover, says the Mishnah, Maseftas Bechiras, V'ladeis Peturin Min HaBechira. The children that they split from... that's part of the profits of an animal, is that the children, so let's say the animal that was given as the Tzayim Barzel, ends up having four children, so the Jewish worker gets two, and the non-Jewish owner gets two, and that's how they split the profits. But the children are exempt from Bechayri. In other words, not only is the mother, meaning the animal that was consigned on this Iska, it's going to be exempt from the halachas of a firstborn, meaning if that animal, gives birth to a firstborn child, although generally the halacha by a Jewish person, his firstborn animal of his animal that he owns has the kedusha b'chayra of the firstborn has to be given to the kayin. This animal, its firstborn, will not be sanctified. The reason being is because this animal itself is owned by the non-Jew. And the Torah says that halacha b'chayra only applies to a Jew and not by others. But what the Mishnah is teaching us is that even the children of that animal, which half of them belong to the Jew, those animals which go to the portion of the Jewish person are going to be exempt from the Bechayr when they become pregnant and give birth to their first child. Now, what we see from this Mishnah is that obviously we consider that, although that we have a Tzayim Barzel animal over here, that it's considered so much so in the Rishus of the one who gave it, because even the children which goes to the Jew, which is his portion, even there, the halacha is that those animals, when they'll have children, will not have the halacha of Bechayra. Now, if you said, like you said in our Mishnah, that it's all in the liability of the one who's receiving it, so why are these animals putter from Bechayra? It's considered totally in the rishus of the receiver, who's a Jew, and the Jew is like he totally owns it. He owes other money back to the non-Jewish owner of the animal. That's what Tzayim Barzel is. As we said, that's what's considered totally as ribbis, because it's completely as a milva, which means to say that it's totally owned by the lover, by the borrower. So why is it exempt from Bechayri if it's totally owned by the Jew? So that seems to be contradiction between our Mishnah and Mishnah Masechet Bechayris. So my bias is like kash, it's not difficult. The Mishnah Masechet Bechayris is, for example, the Mekabel Ala Oin Sebezula, the non-Jewish owner of the animal, although it's Tzayim Barzel, but he took upon himself that if anything beyond control happens to the animal, or if it depreciates, he'll take the loss, he'll take responsibility. Oh, so therefore he's taking some responsibility, so it's not totally in the rishus of the Yisrael as a milva, because a milva, you take total responsibility. You borrow a certain amount of money, I don't care if you lose it, you have to pay me back the loan. It's not like a rental or something, like you're a shamer, you took responsibility. The moment you take it, you got to give me back that money. Here, obviously, it's not like that, because the non-Jewish owner took some responsibility. That's why it's different in that case, and that's why it's going to be exempt from Bechayr, because the non-Jew obviously still has some rights in it from the fact that he has those responsibilities. Whereas our Mishnah over here is talking about Dulei Kibbul Alel Ein Tzavazula, where the one who gave it did not take any responsibility whatsoever. It's totally in the liability of the receiver, and that's why it's considered totally like a milva, and that's why a problem about ribbis. Now, in this interpretation of Abaye, Omele Rava, Rava asks, I don't understand. Idu Kabbalah Mara Ein Sabazul, if you explain the Mishnah Masechtas Becheiros, that the non-Jewish owner took upon himself responsibility if something beyond the control happens or that it depreciates, so Tzom Barzel Karislei? How are you calling it, the Mishnah they were describing, if someone receives the iron sheep from the non-Jew, that's not iron sheep anymore, because it will depreciate in the domain of the non-Jewish owner. He's not going to get back exactly what he gave. Tzom Barzel is, you know you're confident you're getting back exactly what was given. So how could you call that Tzom Barzel? Moreover, if it's true, like you're answering, that even where the owner accepts upon himself responsibility of Einis or Zula, you still call it Tzom Barzel, then I have the following question for you. Adetani Seifa, instead of our Mishnah here at the end, saying that although it's forbidden to go ahead and accept Tzom Barzel from a Jew, of Makabin Tzom Barzel from an Akam, but you could accept Tzom Barzel from a non-Jew, on that asks Rava, Liflik Bididei. As the Gemara always asks, if you could make a differentiation in the category itself of the Jew, where it's forbidden, instead of going to say, oh, where it's permitted is by a non-Jew, differentiate even in the Jew, you could find the term Basel that would be permitted. Because you should say, when did we say that it's forbidden to accept term Basel from a Jew? That's like Kabbalah Ein Sabazula. That's when the Jewish owner that you're receiving from did not accept upon himself any responsibility. So it's a total liability on the receiver. So it's total like a milva. And therefore you can't give him back anything more than, which would be the profits, than what you borrowed from him. Because that's ribs. But it should have said that, but if he did accept upon himself some responsibility, then it's not a total liability on the receiver, and then you could give him some of the profits, because it's not like a milva anymore. So why go to a non-Jew if you could say it even in a Jew? So because of these two questions, Elam Rava, rather he says, no, both our Mishnayos are talking about where the owner of the animal did not accept upon himself any responsibility of Einasa Vezula. Didn't take upon himself any responsibility, and therefore it's totally in the domain of the receiver. Now, so how do we understand the Mishnah Masechtas Becheiros? Seemingly, the halacha of our Mishnah is correct. It's totally in the rishus of the Mekabel, and that's why it's a problem about ribbis. So why, if it's totally in the rishus of the Yisrael receiver over there, are those animals not chayv and Becheiros? It has nothing to do with the non-Jewish owner. It's like it's not even his. And that says, Rav, the reason why they're Masechtas Becheiros, that the children from that original animal, even those children, when they have their firstborn, are exempt from Becheiro, is for the following reason. Kivin de'i, since if the non-Jew is going to ultimately come and claim his money, as it was valued at the time that he gave this investment to the Jewish person to do the work, which he said, it's Tzom Barzel, I want to get back exactly profit, maybe. For sure I'm getting back the principle that I give you to you the Jew. Now, since if lo yohiv zuzi, if when the non-Jew comes to claim his money, the Jew's going to say, I'm sorry, I don't have any money. So the non-Jew is going to come and take back that original animal which was his, which you gave to the Jew to work as this iska of Tzom Barzel. Now, if he's not going to find the animal, let's say the animal's not there anymore, die, or something happened, let's say he's not around anymore. What is the non-Jew going to do? He's going to go and grab the children, not just his, of course his portion of the profits he's going to take, but he's going to take the Jew's profits. His children that were supposed to go to the Jew, he's going to take back and say, hey, you owe me the principal. Where's my money? I don't have money. If I give you the animal that I gave you, I don't have the animal. Well, then I'm going to take the children from the animal. That's what the non-Jew is going to do. So therefore, so because of that, it's considered as if the non-Jew has some hand in the middle over here, because he has some rights in the children, because if there is some way that through the evolutionary process of not getting paid his money or getting the principle that he gave, he's going to go ultimately to the children that belong to the Jew. That's why even those children are considered as if the non-Jew has some ownership rights in it, and that their children will not, I mean the first child of that child, will not have the halachas of Becheira because of a cholyan nachi be'emtza patim in Becheira. It has to be totally owned by a Jew to be chayv in the first halachas of the firstborn. Since the child of the animal that he gave to him, he ultimately will possibly go and take that, so he has some ownership rights. That animal, therefore, is considered partly owned by the non-Jew, and therefore that animal does not have the halacha of its firstborn being kaddish b'becheira, because it has some rights to the non-Jew. So that's why, but it's not because it's not totally liable on the part of the makabel. It is, but it's still not considered fully owned by the Jewish person, because the non-Jew could go and get rights there, so that's considered yanachir be'emtza, and that's why it's exempt from becheira. Now the Gemara continues with the topic of our Mishnah, according to Pasuk of Mishlei. Pasuk says, "Mar b'hayne b'neshach b'tarbis." For someone increases his wealth with biting and with increase, which are two terms used for the lending on interest. L'chaynin dalam yikbetzenu. So he's gathering the money for that who is concerned and caring about the poor. So ask the Gemara, "L'chaynin dalam." What does that mean? He's collecting for the one who is compassionate on the poor. So Amarav, he says, "Kigun shavar malka," like King Shapur, who is the king, the Persian king. Who he was a progressive king in the sense that he would take the money from the Jews and give the money to the poor non-Jewish person. Who the reason why they're called dalim, poor, is because they're poor from mitzvahs, and in a spiritual sense. So in other words, he's saying that the one who's going to try to gather all this inappropriate money because lending on interest is forbidden, that don't think you're getting profit. You're actually going to be confiscated by the king who's going to give it to all the poor people, not doing any work. They're going to take all your money that you got from inappropriate means. Now, Amr of Nachman, he said, Amali Huna told me that this pasuk was not necessary to tell us that the one that gets money based on interest, he's going to lose all his money, it's going to be confiscated, it's going to go to all the poor. It was only necessary to say it not just when you lend to a Jew, but even if you lend to a non-Jew and you get interest from him, that's what the pasuk is telling us. Even in such a situation, it's going to go and be depleted and it's going to be taken away. Now, on that, Esvei Rava Rav Nachman, on that, what Rav Nachman just said, Rava asked him. The pasuk in Devarim says, La nachri sashach, to a non-Jew, you could lend on interest. My sashach, lav sishach, isn't it saying, because although the word sashach means to borrow, but as we'll see shortly in the Gemara, that seemingly doesn't make sense that you should borrow from interest on the non-Jew. So it must be really mean to say sishach, mean that you're permitted to lend him on interest. So you see that the Torah says you're allowed to. How are you saying that if someone lends the non-Jew on interest, that he's going to lose all his money? So now the Gemara says, Loi, no, it's like the words of the pasuk say. It means sashach, meaning you could give him ribbis. You could borrow from him on interest, but you cannot take from him interest. And that asked the Gemara, then how do we understand the pasuk? Loi sagi de lav hachi? Well, it's not enough if it's not like that. In other words, what the pasuk is coming to command us that we have to give interest to a non-Jew? In other words, as Rashi points out, if it would be coming to say that it's permitted to borrow on interest from a non-Jew, that's pretty obvious. Why would we think it's forbidden? The pasuk never says, only says forbidden from a fellow Jew. So what is the pasuk saying? It would only sound like as if it's commanding you. Why would the Torah command you that you have to borrow an interest from a non-Jew? So I think Mar says, you're right. No, it's not saying that you're allowed to lend on interest because you're not allowed to lend on interest even to a non-Jew. What it's saying is that, and it doesn't have to tell you that you could borrow on interest from the non-Jew, and neither are you commanded to. What it is saying when it's saying that for the non-Jew you could is lafuka chicha deloy. It's actually coming to tell us what's being excluded. It's telling you for the non-Jew you could to tell you, but from that your brother you cannot. That has the Gemara, Chicha Behadik said, but what do you mean? For your brother, the fellow Jew? That explicitly the Pasuk says. It says, L'chicha le'sashach, that you cannot borrow to your brother on interest. So why would I need this inference to tell it to me? That says the Gemara, Lavro le'ba'aseva le'sasei. You're right, it's coming to say that not only is there a negative prohibition where it says, L'chicha le'sashach, it's coming to include also a positive commandment. Because when it's a lava bo mechlal asay, it's asay, meaning we infer this negative prohibition from the positive commandment of that you could do it with a non-Jew. So when you infer it, it's a positive commandment. It's just coming to tell us that not only is there a negative prohibition, there's also a positive commandment. But you're right, it's not telling us anything regards to that you could borrow from the non-Jew, or that you have to borrow from the non-Jew. But neither is it telling us that you could lend to the non-Jew. Because that the Gemara is assuming right now, like Rav Nachman said, that one is not should not even lend to a non-Jew on ribbis. No, not the Gemara is aisvei. But we learned in our Mishnah that says, Lavin mehen umalvin eisim beribis. You could borrow from them and lend the non-Jew on ribis, and even b'chim megir teshev, even from the resident convert. So how can you say that you're not allowed to lend on interest? So Amrav Chiyah b'Rei Rav Huna, he says, you're right. It's loy nitzucha ela, as a continued top of ayin alf and alf, b'chdei chayev. Biblically, you're right. There's no prohibition to lend a non-Jew on interest. As the Pasuk says, you could lend and borrow from a non-Jew on interest. But what the Mishnah here was permitting to lend to a non-Jew in interest was only what's necessary for the livelihood of a Jew. A lot of times Jews weren't even able to own land. The only thing he was able to do was to be a loan shark. So that was permitted. Now, more than that is rabbinically forbidden, and that's what the halacha was being said, because a person might come to get used to that, of charging on interest, and then he might make a whole livelihood, and he might end up lending to Jewish people on interest. So to prevent a person from getting into that type of livelihood, so therefore they said that you can't lend money more than what's necessary for you to survive, to lending money even to a non-Jew on interest. Another approach, Ravina Amar, he says that, right, it's not talking about biblically, because biblically you're allowed to lend on interest, as we see from the halacha of our Mishnah. But hacha, in our Mishnah, we were talking about, if you're allowed to lend them on interest, it's talking about Talmidei Chacham Askin, it's talking about by Talmudic scholars. Because time, my God, Rabbanu, what's the reason why the rabbis decreed that you're not allowed to lend even to a non-Jew money on interest? That's because Shema, maybe you might start hanging out with the non-Jewish consumers, and Yilmud Mimaisav, you might come to learn from their actions. Now, Vekivin the Talmud Chacham Hula Yilmud Mimaisav, but since he's a Talmudic scholar, he's not going to learn from the non-Jews. He's allowed to lend them on interest and be involved with them in this type of a business dealing, in contrast to a regular person. So again, the Gemara is saying that a person is not going to, it's not biblically forbidden to lend a non-Jew money on interest, but what a person does, that he's going to lose his money, as we learned the Pasuk of Mishlei, doesn't have to be just even for a biblical violation. It could be even for a rabbinic violation where you shouldn't be lending money even to a non-Jew. Again, either that means any person, when it's more than what's necessary for him to survive, is not allowed to lend to the non-Jew on interest. Or, like Ravina says, that a regular person is never allowed to lend on interest, but a Talmud Chacham, as we learn in the Halacha of a Mishnah, he's allowed to lend on interest because he's not going to learn from the non-Jews, even though he's going to be with them, and therefore there's no problem about lending the non-Jew money on interest.